Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonya Rappaport.
And today, Sonya, we are in the Neogenic Nightmare, the second season of the Spider-Man animated series, Chapter 10, an episode entitled The Immortal Vampire. Which I guess really gives away the ending if you watch this whole episode through, but we'll get to that. So this is the conclusion of the, well, for now anyway, I guess, the Morbius Blade plotline that's been playing much of the Neogenic Nightmare season of the Spider-Man animated series. But before we get to that, we should mention we saw Blade last night.
Yeah.
The Wesley Snipes 1998 Blade movie.
Finally got around to it.
Yes. Well, like I said, I saw it once years ago, just one time, and I do remember enjoying it. And on rewatch, it was a very interesting movie-going experience, would you not say?
I mean, we didn't go to the movies. We were at home watching it, like, in comfort.
Right, that's true.
What was interesting about it, would you say?
I thought, this is what I really liked about the movie. I thought Wesley Snipes was pitch perfect as an over-the-top, early, serious comic book hero. Mm-hmm. You know, we had comic book movies before Blade, like Batman or Superman, and, well, maybe those aren't good comparisons, but it wasn't like a cartoony over-the-top. Wasn't like Batman and Robin or Batman Forever.
It was like a comics-y over the top, though.
Yeah. It was somewhere between camp and good. anyway, Wesley Snipes was cool. The character of Blade was cool. I like Chris Christopherson as Whistler. He was like a low-rent Jeff Bridges or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But beyond that, I thought, I was surprised how much people, I remember reading that people said, oh, The Matrix, it's like a pre-Matrix movie, it kind of predicted a lot of the stuff from The Matrix, and I was surprised how true that was.
Yeah, the slow motion bullet dodging scene.
The wardrobe, the time and place in New York City, like late 90s New York City, where it's like techno rave culture.
Right. That little cut scene where they're in, like, the white nothingness.
Right, the white nothingness scene, the sort of 3D video effect scenes of the weird vampire ritual. Yeah. That's the whole plot of the movie is kind of computer-y.
I mean, the sunglasses.
Yeah, the sunglasses. the opening massacre, like the gratuitous violence vampire massacre at the beginning of the movie is kind of like a late 90s thing that's readjusted in action movies in a way. Mm-hmm. You don't have that kind of, like, wanton, like, mass murdering violence in a public place. Well, I know it was at a nightclub, but anyway, the movie opens. We're not going to talk about the whole movie, but it opens. Some, like, human dude gets invited to a nightclub. It's a rave. There's a whole bunch of freaky people there. They turn out all to be vampires, and they have what's known as a bloodbath. So, like, all the sprinkler system is replaced with blood, human blood, and it's spraying on everyone there, and everyone's, like, licking their faces and licking each other. And the one human in this room of, like, 500 people that are all dancing to a DJ, he's freaking out, and he's trying to escape, and the vampires are going to eat this guy. But luckily, Blade shows up, and he proceeds to, like, tackle a room of, like I said, 500 vampires. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't even break a sweat, and he does rescue the one guy. Even though he leaves him in a compromising position when the police come, and there's all these, like, weird dead corpses and things everywhere.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a crazy movie. The CGI is predictably bad.
Yeah, well, it's 1998.
Right. I mean, there's a fight at the end with Stephen Dorff, who's the main villain, and he's a really good actor. I enjoyed him. As a Beatles fan, I enjoyed him from the shitty Beatles movie Backbeat, where he played Stu Sutcliffe. Not a good movie, but a movie that has a warm place in my heart. Anyway, so it was like, I hear Blade 2 is way better. Like, that's where the Blade movies get really good. And then I think supposedly Blade 3 falls off a little bit.
I think you
had
a hard time watching Blade 1. Like, sitting through it, it looked difficult for you.
It was, I just,
when
okay.
There was still like an hour left, you were like, oh my god, still an hour.
Yeah, it's a long movie. I thought it was a long movie. And I also found the plot a bit incomprehensible because a lot of it was about, like, Blade's origin, which I found confusing, what his limitations were and his vampire powers, and, like, the whole deal with his mother, I found, like, very weirdly explained.
I think you weren't paying close attention, maybe.
Possibly.
I thought the plotline was coherent.
You did.
But they put in all these weird vampire, like, sexualized vampire characterizations that I find so unnecessary. They did it with his mother towards the end, where she is, like, putting him into that human mold thing,
right,
to, like, get
suck his blood.
Yeah. but it's like she's his mom, and she's like, but I'm not your mom anymore now that I'm a vampire, and she's like trying to make out with him.
She wasn't quite trying to make out with him, but you're right, it was an overly sexualized scene. It was bizarre.
But then later on, when
his girlfriend
the hematologist is like trying to help him, then like she turns into a mother figure, kind of like.
Yeah, and he sucks her blood, and it goes on so long.
Always a thing with vampire like movies and books and stuff. Like, is it a fantasy of somebody's?
That was my question too. Watch the movie. Whose fantasy is this? Because this vampire sex thing is just this common motif in all vampire media, where vampires are supposed to be sexy, and sucking people's blood is sexy, and the danger and all of it. And yeah, it's like we had the same question. Like, who is this sexy to? I mean, I get it's sexy if you have sexy actors like Wesley Snipes or the characters from the Buffy TV series or the guys from Twilight, like whoever. Like, they hire really good looking actors, the actors from True Blood. Mm-hmm. So that in itself is sexy, but that it's just a coincidence that these vampires are sexy. But you're right. Like, what? Like, is someone like attracted to the act of?
Like, blood sucking
and the weird gross vampire people hunting, you know what I mean? Like, that's a big part of these vampire movies is they've got all these weird like sex slaves and familiars and
right,
like everything is just I don't get like what it's, I guess it's like just of the sex genre of BDSM of somewhere in there, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe we're the black just not leather
and, educated about it or well something. It's not
I don't want to be judgmental about it. I just do find you're right, there's just something bizarre because it's a it's a popular movie genre. It's right. A popular television genre, and it's like fairly mainstream almost to say that vampire movies and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like it's a mainstream genre, and the underlying message is like you said, like who is this for? That like whose fantasy is this?
Right.
So it's weird. I'm sure there's been tons of books written about like the psychology of, you know, sex and vampires and all this nonsense, but.
Yeah.
Anyway, but back to the Blade movie, it was good. I just found right. I did.
I don't think it was good.
Really? I thought you enjoyed it. First of all, you were paying attention to it more than I was.
Yeah, but to call it good is not exactly accurate. I think.
No, I thought it was. I was impressed.
It's a precursor.
Fine.
And,
yeah.
There were like it had a coherent plot line. It had good actors.
I thought the stylization was interesting. I thought stylistically it was cool. It wasn't like a lame movie.
Yeah.
It was, though. It like, was. All right. No, plot-wise, I thought it was lame. I definitely thought the plot was lame.
I thought some of, like, the... I don't know if it's directing or what, but some of the notes it hits were incongruous with the rest of it. There's, like, a scene in the beginning when he, like, kills a whole bunch of vampires, and then he does, like, a little fist pump, like, yeah. Like, it was, like, so out of place. Like,
I kind
of
liked that for some reason. That was the weird... That was the camp aspect of it that I weirdly liked. I don't know why.
And it goes along with, like, the weird CG. CGI flying skeletons at the end.
That was awful.
And, like, the blood CGI. I don't know. Anyway, yes, I enjoyed it, but I wouldn't say it's a good movie.
Well, I do think we have to see Blade 2 because it's supposed to be way better.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not ready to give up on Blade.
No. I'm ready to watch the next one.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Sometime soon.
We'll watch the next one and let you guys know. But anyway...
But it was really interesting to watch that after just watching... the Spider-Man episodes that have Blade in them. It just, like, gives you a whole richer context for it.
I guess so, but, and it's just funny, again, to repeat, like we mentioned in our last episode, that the producers of Blade, which include Avi Arad, stole the scripts from, well, like, elements of the scripts from the Spider-Man adaptation of Blade.
He's a producer on the movie, right?
Yeah, he is, yeah. He's one of the major executive producers. New Line Cinema, not Sony, unless they're a division of Sony that I don't know of, that caught my eye. Anyway... So back to the Spider-Man show, this is the conclusion, like we said, to the Blade Morbius plot line. I don't know if Morbius comes back. I don't remember him reappearing, and based on his fate in this episode, it doesn't seem like there'd be much of an opening for Morbius to return. Perhaps he does, perhaps he doesn't, I don't know, we'll have to be surprised. But, this episode opens, where it's left off the last one where Blade and Spider-Man teamed up to become friends and hunt down Morbius. And they're tracking him throughout the city. Morbius is flying away. He's looking for something. They don't know what. They mention some more cool tech on Blade's incomprehensible motorcycle. Like, he's got this ancient compass that detects vampires. And Spider-Man comments that oh, it, you know, we would have found Morbius sooner, but Blade mentioned to me that the compass doesn't work well in a city. So much
tall buildings interfere. It's like a GPS signal,
right? But it's like this weird, baffling piece of ancient technology, like one of those old, like Atlantean compasses from some Aquaman something. Anyway, Morbius has the Recombinator. He Spider-Man remarks again that his plan is to turn the world into vampires. He wants to make vampires the dominant species on Earth. And but Spider-Man also needs the Recombinator back because without it, he won't stop from mutating himself back into the Man-Spider. So as we mentioned, his neogenic nightmare is not quite yet over. And then, so they're tracking Morbius, and also tracking Blade and Spider-Man is our pal Lieutenant Lee, the female police detective who is on the case of the ESU student plague outbreak, which no one knows is a vampire problem. Lieutenant Lee, we learned in this episode her name is Terry Lee, which, if you're keeping score at home, another character's first name revealed. She tracks Spider-Man and Blade to the George Washington Bridge, which is cool. We get another real-world New York City location for some action and mayhem to break out. At some point, Spider-Man and Blade are breaking into some facility, and Spider-Man shoots two webs from his hands, and he gives one of his webs for Blade to climb, which I really liked. I thought that was real generous of Spider-Man.
Yeah, he always comes up with these new clever uses for the tricks that he's got.
Right. I think the plan here, I might be skipping ahead, I'm not sure, is that Spider-Man knows Morbius is going to be at some kind of computer chip factory because he needs a computer chip to make the Recombinator work, and so that's where he knows Morbius is going to be. So they're breaking into there, and Blade again is going to kill Morbius, but Spider-Man saves Morbius yet again. This infuriates Blade. This happened several times in the last episode, and it's going to happen several times in this episode, where somebody's trying to kill Morbius, mainly Blade, and Spider-Man keeps trying to save him, even though Morbius at this point does not want to be saved, at least at this point. So they're fighting Morbius, they're fighting each other, because there's confusion about who's doing what. Lieutenant Lee is captured by Morbius, and they're going to follow him, but instead of taking her hostage, he just drops her from a great height. And Blade heroically saves Lieutenant Lee, which right away I was like, are Lieutenant Lee and Blade going to fall in love? And the answer was
yes.
Yes. So, so romance sparks between Blade and Lieutenant Lee. So, you know, I don't know, like, Spider-Man is, like, the action keeps sort of, like, shifting. Like, the Spider-Man keeps fighting Blade.
It's similar to the last episode in that way. It kind of jumps around a lot. Like, they're kind of in a loop, you know?
Right.
Where, like, Spider-Man is like, all right, Blade, we're going to team up and go get Morbius. And then they find Morbius, and Blade is like, all right, I'm going to kill this vampire right now. Yeah. And Spider-Man's like, no, don't do it. And I'm like, so then, couldn't you guys have just, like, had a conversation in transit about, like, what your goals are?
And Spider-Man and Blade fight, like, every time. It happens, like, three times this episode where they go to fight Morbius. They fight Morbius, then they end up fighting each other, and then one of them fights Morbius by themselves. And so in this case, Spider-Man fights Morbius by himself. He runs out of webbing, which I always like to point out in the show because I love that element of the Spider-Man character, that his web-slinging ammo is not infinite. It's a great narrative storytelling device. At this point, Spider-Man and Blade break it to Lieutenant Lee that vampires are real. She's quite surprised. I guess they go back to Blade's hideout, where they meet Whistler again. He's working on some new gadget. It's like a super high-tech force field that can only trap vampires. They test it on Spider-Man, but it doesn't work. He's quite freaked out at the time. Anyway, like, Blade's freaking out. Much like he is in the movie, he needs a serum that abates his bloodlust.
Right.
And so that's, like, a big plot line of the movie, too, where he needed the serum. That was, like, a plot element that lost me a bit in the movie.
Why?
Because he needs the serum to not need the blood. But could he just take blood from a blood bank? Because they established that in the movie that, like, blood banks deliver to vampires. That the vampires are rich, they've got the secret cabal, and they like own the police a little bit too, to a certain extent. And then, like, at some point, Blade stops like a limousine for vampires. He opens the trunk and he finds like a cooling pack of blood packets.
Yeah.
So it's like, could Blade just get like a friendly blood bank to give him some blood instead of the serum?
Yeah, but he doesn't want to
be a vampire.
Be a vampire, yeah. He doesn't want to like eat people's.
Right, but then the plot of the movie is that like the serum's not working any longer. They need some other solution. The serum's just wearing out. It doesn't work.
Right.
So, but at the end of the movie, the climax is he eats his girlfriend's neck, doesn't kill her.
Because he doesn't have the serum.
Right, he's going to die.
And she realizes that she needs him to come back to life to stop, like, the other vampires that are getting stronger.
Right, but my question is...
So she lets him.
But he doesn't seem like his personality changes or anything once he has human blood. He just seems like he's his normal self. Uh-huh. He knows the difference between right and wrong.
He got stronger.
Yeah, he even got stronger from her blood, right? So yeah. I'm just curious, like, the whole thing with the serum and the blood, it doesn't make sense to me.
It's about him having ethics, I think.
Okay, all right. I guess it's fair, but there's some, like, something that I wasn't, like, tracking myself personally. That's where I thought the movie didn't explain it, like, as coherently as, or maybe I wasn't paying attention, like, you're accusing me of. Because I kept asking you about it, and you were just yelling at me at a certain point.
Well, anyway, the same thing is happening in the cartoon. I mean,
right.
He needs his serum all the time, and, like, it's wearing off, kind of. Like,
But that's what I'm saying. I'm confused, because in the cartoon, they kind of indicate almost that if he doesn't get the serum, he's going to become, like, a mindless vampire and just hunt people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's bad. So, like, to me, the cartoon spelled it out a little bit clearer, that without the serum, he just becomes, like, a monster.
Yeah.
And he can't control himself.
Well, no, I don't think it's that he becomes mindless. I think it's, like, you know, kind of like Morbius is. It's, like, he gets so ravenous that he has to, like, feed on some human. But then he also is, like, clear-minded sometimes.
It's hard to say.
You know?
Like I said, there's something
but the whole thing is that, on. Like, he wants to be ethical about it. Like, he doesn't want to feed on innocent people.
Right. Okay. Anyway, yeah, but you could always feed on a person in a pinch. Like I said, he doesn't even kill his girlfriend. She seems fine by the end of the movie.
Okay, but
she seemed happy to give him the blood.
Because it was an emergency.
She seemed totally fine, and he drank her blood for a long time, by the way. Anyway,
it was totally an emergency, and then she was, like, half dead afterwards, and he's trying not to, like, harm the public.
All right, anyway. All right. Back in Queens, Peter Parker's heading home to get more web fluid. His spider sense goes off. Aunt May, though, seems out of danger, just sleeping on her couch, which she often does in the show. I guess a lot of old people just fall asleep on their couches.
Yeah, but actually Felicia was, too, in this episode.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
I thought that was weird.
I guess it's just, like, the sign of, like, an anxious person waiting for a loved one to get home.
Yeah.
I think Aunt May's cursed with Peter being out so late. You know, mm-hmm. Peter really drives up her anxiety. But anyway, his spider sense is going off because Morbius is trashing Peter Parker's room. He doesn't know it's Spider-Man's house. He's looking for the blood that he used to turn himself into a vampire. So, if you don't remember, Morbius, the reason he turned into a vampire is that he stole a sample of Peter's blood from his locker. He thought Peter was working on an experiment. He didn't realize it was Spider-Man's blood. And he used the blood in combination with the Recombinator, and a vampire bat flew away of the Recombinator's beam, and it turned Morbius into a vampire. So a lot of that has to do with Spider-Man's guilt here with this Morbius character and why he feels like he has to save him.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as Morbius knows, all Peter's done is just invent some kind of, like, genetic magic blood that he needs more information on. So that's why he's trashing Peter's room. Morbius flies away, though, empty-handed. Meanwhile, at the Daily Bugle, we haven't checked in on them in a while. We see J. Jonah Jameson and Robbie Robinson. They're talking about, Peter Parker being missing and how they can't count on him. Meanwhile, Morbius is at the newspaper looking for Peter again there, and he sucks some, like, security guy's blood. But anyway, he confronts J.J. Morbius, and he questions him as to where Peter Parker is. J.J. doesn't know. So Morbius flies away again, another strike two for Morbius.
Mm.
Meanwhile, Peter shows up to the Daily Bugle. J. Jonah Jameson wants answers from Peter because he says, "Where have you been? You've been missing. You're not getting us pictures, too, by the way, while you're on the payroll. You suck." Peter has to think fast. He says that to himself anyway, and he offers J.J. the picture of the century. Morbius, the vampire. He says, "I know it's a vampire. I'll get you that picture, I promise." And J.J. gives him a classic 24 hours to get it done or he's fired. Peter says, "I need one favor from you." It turns out he needs to borrow a Daily Bugle truck, which, in the end, I'm not sure why he needed the Daily Bugle truck specifically? Did he just need a truck?
He needed a van, yeah.
Right, okay.
Because the invention that Whistler had made was, he comments on how it's, like, too big, it's not portable, so he needed a van to be able to transport that weapon that Whistler was working on to, like, paralyze a vampire without killing it.
Right. So Peter drives the van. Blade's got this whole warehouse with Whistler of super advanced equipment. None of them have a van, which I guess a van's really handy in the Spider-Man universe. Just see the Punisher. Peter brings the wheels. They don't know he's Spider-Man, obviously. And so Peter drives up to Whistler's hideout. What happens? Blade is real suspicious of him. He's like, "Who are you?" And Lieutenant Lee's like, "He knows Spider-Man. He's cool." And this is my favorite line of the episode, where Blade's like, "Knowing Spider-Man does not make him cool."
He really draws it out like that, too.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was funny. So they're hatching their plan to try to trick Morbius. We'll see what the plan is in a minute. Peter then realizes where the next Morbius attack will be. It's at Mary Jane's house, because Morbius is tracking down all of Peter Parker's favorite things in life. His house, his job, and now Mary Jane, who he knows he's interested in. So Peter shows up at Mary Jane's house. Mary Jane, though, has had it with Peter. She's ready to have a big fight with him. And she puts it all on the line. She says, "You know, you've been really flaking out on me. I've been too worried about you. Our relationship is messed up. I thought we had something special." She's like, "I need you to decide right now, who do you like, me or Felicia?"
And Peter's like, "You're right, it is about Felicia." And Mary Jane is like, "Oh," and, like, storms away.
Which is really clever on Peter's part, because he knows Morbius is stalking them right now.
Yeah.
And he's taking Mary Jane out of the picture as a target. So if Morbius thinks that he doesn't care about Mary Jane, he's not going to go grab Mary Jane and take her as a hostage.
It does put Felicia, like, squarely in the crosshairs, but I guess she was anyway, because Morbius loves her.
Yes, but it's like, this is just a great classic Spider-Man triangle thing, as great as Spider-Man gets narratively.
Yeah.
Where he secretly loves Mary Jane, but he has to lie to her about his feelings to protect her, because she's in immediate danger and he can't reveal to her what's going on.
Right, and on the inside, he's thinking, "Okay, Mary Jane, I'm going to make this up to you one day, but, like, right now I got some stuff to do."
Yeah, his life is so unbelievably complicated and tragic. He can't sort out all his secret lives. And I like this. This is why I love this version of Spider-Man. I feel like they did this in several of the Spider-Man movies. This is the best version. I think, like, sometimes in the Tobey Maguire movies where, probably in the second one, where he's constantly on the fence about whether he can have a relationship with Mary Jane. Mm. And he's very just so emotional and whiny about it. And this is, like, way sadder in the Tobey Maguire portrayal.
Yeah.
In this version, he's
wistful.
He's wistful. He's, like, clever. He's confident. And he's sad at the same time. It's not...
It's more complex.
Yeah, it's more complex. And you know it's more serialized. So the emotional stakes aren't quite as high as Tobey Maguire probably had to play them just for the sake of a 2-hour movie. So here it's like Peter, it's like he's in it for the long game, and it just makes it more interesting, I think. Okay, so anyway, so Mary Jane walks away. Morbius is enraged about hearing that Peter is interested in Felicia, so he attacks Peter, and he's also demanding that give me the blood. And Peter's like, "Oh, okay, it's in my van." So he lures him over to the van, and surprise, waiting inside is Whistler and Blade. They shoot the force field at Morbius. Peter gets his picture of the century, but Morbius breaks free of the force field, and he swoops into Peter's house and steals Aunt May.
And he takes her as a hostage, and Peter is freaking out.
He's screaming,
waving his fists in the air.
Screaming at the moon.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Him waving his fists in the air is quite comical. He's so enraged. There's not much he can do in this moment. So Peter is freaking out. He has to do everything he can to save Aunt May. Meanwhile, I guess Lieutenant Lee and Blade, like, go back to the hideout or something. Blade gives more... Well, Lieutenant Lee got the backstory on Blade's childhood from Whistler, but now Lieutenant Lee and Blade are having a deep conversation about their feelings and their emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So Blade says something like, "I have no emotions," or something like that.
Right, and Lieutenant Lee is like, "Well, it's not that hard to learn to love again or something.
And they immediately make out.
Yeah.
And it's a long kiss, too. I was really surprised. It's long enough that Spider-Man walks in on it, and he's completely pissed off at them.
He's like, oh, somebody has time to enjoy life. Great. Or something.
Right. So they like, scream at each other. They might even fight a little bit. I'm not quite sure I remember, but they're really pissed off at each other. They both vow to go solo. Spider-Man says, I've had enough of you and your high-tech weapons. He smashes a few of them,
mm-hmm.
and he heads out. Blade's like, I don't even know why I ever listened to you. You're an idiot. I would have killed Morbius a long time ago and been done with it. So they both vow, like I said, they both vow to go solo. Spider-Man is, like, crushed over losing Aunt May here. Meanwhile, back at Morbius's base somewhere, he comments to Aunt May, who's passed out in shock again. She's passing out from shock a lot. This time she doesn't get hospitalized like she needed to be the last time with, I think it was the Hobgoblin, or someone kidnapped her. Maybe it was Landon, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, she doesn't need to be hospitalized here. But anyway, Morbius says, it's lucky for you that I've fed already. I'll just leave you here for now. I guess he's gonna, like, he wants to turn into a vampire to experiment on her. It's like,
oh, Aunt May? No, I don't think so. No? I think he wants to hold her hostage because he wants Peter to bring the blood.
Right, that's true. So anyway, Spider-Man, he goes to the last place. He's kind of set up Morbius with the whole Mary Jane thing. He goes to Felicia's apartment to stake it out. And by coincidence, Mary Jane and Harry are on a date, like, within one block of Felicia's apartment. Peter sees this and overhears it. He's kicking himself, and while he's lamenting the loss of Mary Jane, Morbius swoops into Felicia's apartment, scoops her up, and kidnaps her. She passes out in shock too upon seeing Morbius. At first she thinks it's Michael, but, well, I mean, it is
his human form. Yeah,
right.
And then she, like, gets a closer look and just faints. And
yeah, so Spider-Man's life is totally messed up at this point. He's completely failing all over the place.
Yeah, and he knows it, too. He's sad about it.
Yeah, so, I mean, let's recap real quick. Like, Mary Jane breaks up with him, then she immediately proceeds to date his best friend. He then goes to protect Felicia, who gets kidnapped. Oh, and before that, his aunt gets kidnapped, too, by his same vampire.
One and only family member.
And he was in both locations at the same time, and he let this guy get away with it. So, Spider-Man's striking out big time here. Meanwhile, Blade's back on the trail of Morbius himself with Lieutenant Lee. They're sneaking around Morbius's, like, compound on the wharf or something. They're falling in, you know, like, Morbius set up some light traps around there to let him know if people are sneaking up onto him. They fall into them. But then very quickly, again, Blade fights Morbius. Lieutenant Lee also... Okay, so this is where it gets confusing. Because, so Blade's fighting Morbius, he's gonna kill Morbius yet again, and Lieutenant Lee's like, no, we have to just arrest him. We have to save his life. That's what Spider-Man was trying to do. Don't you understand that, like, you're a vampire too, and you got a shot at redemption or something.
Right.
And Blade reluctantly agrees to this.
Right, he, like, finally sees reason.
Yes, so, but then Spider-Man swoops into the scene, he attacks Blade, which in the process sets Morbius free. And Blade chews out Spider-Man. He's like, I was gonna let him live this time, you idiot. Now he's gotten away. Spider-Man kicks himself.
He's like, oh, I always leap before I look or something.
Yeah. And Morbius vows to turn Felicia into a vampire with the Recombinator. Right now he has the microchip. He has everything he needs to do so. But it's like in this moment, Felicia makes Morbius remember his humanity. So Felicia's not just like a damsel in distress, or she's not so disgusted with this new version of Morbius that she's like, you're a creature. She, like, understands what's going on.
Right. She's, like, tied up to a pole inside this warehouse with Morbius, like, talking to her while the other three are fighting outside. And she's like, just listen to me for a second. She's like, you used to be, like, a great person who just wanted to stop a plague in your hometown, and you wanted to save people. She's like, don't you understand? Like, you're not the same anymore. I don't want to be responsible for, like, hurting and killing tons of people if you turn me into a vampire. Like, that's not the values that you used to have of, like, the person I fell in love with.
Yeah.
And so then, like...
Great moment by Felicia, I thought, actually.
Yeah, totally. Then, like, Morbius finally, like, sees reason. He's like, oh my god, you're right. Like, I have to, like, turn back into a human. I love you too much.
Yeah.
Okay, and then Spider-Man, like, jumps in again because, like, he doesn't know that this has just taken place.
Is this the point where Aunt May's laying on the ground and the Recombinator beam's about to blast Aunt May?
Right, so, like, the Recombinator beam is on, and Spider-Man, like, swoops in to, like, kick Morbius down, and, like, the beam starts, like, traveling.
It's, like, spinning around the room or something.
Yeah.
And it's,
So, like, yet another instance of where, yeah. like, he should have looked before he leapt, you know? Like, if he had realized that this was going on, like, between him and Morbius, they could have probably figured out a cure.
Right. And then Aunt May is saved, but the beam is about to hit Felicia again, but Morbius jumps in front of the beam to save Felicia. The beam turns him into an ultra vampire bat. Spider-Man comments along the way here that the beam, because it's set to such a high setting, his DNA is now permanently bonded with that of the vampire bat. There's no way he can ever be human again.
Right.
So Morbius is really tragically cursed. And I felt really bad for Morbius, the character.
Yeah.
He was a totally innocent guy for the most part who had a really noble intention, and his life is completely fucked up, mm-hmm. and there's no returning.
Yeah.
So, poor Morbius.
Yeah, and he also, like, sprouts wings and, like, really resembles a bat at this point, and he has to, like, fly away and be sad in a cave forever.
Right, I mean, they try to take him down, like, there's a fight between the bat, Morbius, Spider-Man, and Blade, and Spider-Man has to use all Spider's strength to escape Morbius's grip. To save Aunt May, that's sort of... We've been jumping around a little bit in this fight, but it's all sort of chaotic and confusing. Anyway, so Morbius flies away. Lieutenant Lee says to Blaze, like, hey, I guess we're dating now. Should we go out and see a movie?
And he's like, no.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, I don't think so. That's not how I roll. He kisses her one last time and drives off in his motorcycle. I guess he doesn't, like, really leave in the best terms with Spider-Man. They're just annoyed at each other. They mm-hmm. didn't make for a good pairing. Spider-Man returns Aunt May home and safe. She's still passed out. She kind of wakes up when he leaves her in a bed. She thinks it's all just an intensely real dream. Peter's, like, trying to reassure her, like, no, everything's fine. You were dreaming. And he's still wearing his full Spider-Man costume when he's doing this. He's lucky she didn't open her eyes. Mm. I mean, it's in the dark, too. But anyway, Spider-Man's swinging around the city. He's reflecting on everything that's happened. He's like, yeah, I wonder what happened to old Morbius there.
Mm.
And meanwhile, see Morbius. He's, like, flown across the ocean or something. He's living in a cave. He's really sad. He's like, well, at least I can get some rest as the sun's coming up. And he goes into a cave and hangs upside down and, like a bat, like, crosses his arms and falls asleep. And
dreams of being human and
making out with Felicia.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but in the end, though, Morbius didn't seem that upset about his fate because he's like, ah, a cave, I can finally sleep. That's really what I've all been looking for this entire time.
What do you mean he doesn't seem upset?
That's literally what he says. He's like,
yeah,
ah.
But he doesn't say it with that, like, cheery temperament that you have in your voice. No.
Yeah, maybe not. Yeah.
He's, like, resigned to his, like, sad, immortal fate.
Right. Yeah, that's true. So we close the book on Morbius for now. Maybe he'll come back. I'm not quite sure. The Morbius movie, theoretically, is coming at some point in our lives. If it does come out, we'll talk about it one day.
Yeah. I think the very last scene of Spider-Man is he's swinging through the city, and he does one of those, like, da-da-da-da-da-da, more than you'll ever know.
Yeah, well, I think it ended on Morbius, though, this time.
Oh, it did?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. We got a couple of... we got three endings, Blade, Spider-Man, and Morbius. So that's all I have for this episode. Sonia, any final thoughts on this whole neogenic nightmare as it is still unfolding in our lives?
No, it's a whole chapter that I never really thought about, and now we're thinking about it. That's cool.
Great summary. I think the next episodes are the Tablet of Time series. I'm very...
It's your fave.
It's my absolute favorite. I can't wait to see it and talk about it. I don't even know if us talking about it is going to do it any kind of justice. This is one you got to try to download and rewatch yourselves. It's a two-parter. I'm very looking forward to seeing that. So I'm looking forward to seeing Blade 2.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all I have for this week personally. So let's do our plugs. Follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. Join the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group by searching out X-Men Task Podcast on Facebook. We love to have our new members, love to chat with them there. I posted an interesting announcement there about I want to do sometime this summer, I want to do a fan-inspired episode in the sense where I want to get suggestions from the fans, be it an idea for, like, should we watch this movie? Should we watch, like, Dolph Lundgren's The Punisher from 1989 and talk about it? Or... do you want us to watch, like, an episode of X-Men Evolution or Wolverine and the X-Men and talk about it? Or do you want to, like, ask us other crazy questions about, like, our favorite like whatever it might be, like you know, our favorite like movies, TV shows, like whatever you want to know about us too, like you know, I want to just keep hearing more suggestions from people in the Facebook group, and then maybe we'll do a special episode or two and break up the old routine here. So I'm looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
And also rate and review us 5 stars on iTunes if you please. Sonia, any final words before we say goodbye yet again?
Nope, that's it.
Okay, good night, everybody.
Thanks.